Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to DocTales. We're glad to have you with us again. Today's DocTales session is featuring Harlan and Sarah Vince. They are from Invincible. That is their boat name. Sarah and Harlan, welcome.
Welcome.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Kim and home crew and everybody.
Yeah, you can see that they are coming to us from their boat, which is wonderful. So I'll let you two tell us, where are you on the boat?
Yeah, I'll start.
Go ahead.
Yep, we're in Grand Haven, Michigan. In fact, they just put our boat in for the summer last Friday. So we're in, and we're about a half an hour upriver from Lake Michigan. We're just west of Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's kind of a bigger town.
So she's been splashed for the season. Have you been able to take her out yet?
Nope. In fact, we docked in a big wind, like 40 mile an hour winds when we left the where they put us in. And that used to bother us, but after doing the loop, we put it in no problem.
It was a good captain.
They wanted to know if we needed help. We said, no. No current here. This is no problem.
No current, and you've literally done it hundreds of times at this point.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah, well, we've got some of our Facebook viewers already chiming in. So Kelly says hi to Harlan and Sarah. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, Kelly.
Let's start from the beginning. And for those who perhaps haven't joined us for one of these are just sessions we do at traditional docktail time, which is when people have tied up for the day and are sharing some cocktails, but also sharing some stories. So we're going to hear the stories of Invincible's loop today. So Harlan and Sarah, start us off by telling us what type of boat Invincible is, because it's not quite your typical looper boat.
Nope. This is it's a 1998. It's called a 270. Its overall length is just under 30 feet. And it's a single engine.
Sea Ray.
It's a Sea Ray. It's a single engine gas, which is unusual on the loop. Most boats are diesel, and it's a stern drive as well. So we kind of went against the norm, and it turned out okay.
But we've also owned Invincible for
over 20 years.
Yep. And so we literally know Invincible from front to back.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's a really important point, because there was a time where the conventional wisdom was to perhaps the best boat for the Great Loop is the boat that you already have. And these days we see lots of people who have had a weekender boat for years and are upgrading for comfort or whatever the reason might be for the Great Loop. And you two took that kind of old school approach of, you know, sometimes the best boat is the boat you have. So talk a little bit. Yeah, go ahead, Harlan.
Go ahead. No, that's fine.
Talk a little bit about that. Like, you know, tell us what led to the decision. Did you consider at all a bigger boat, or you were thrilled with what you already
had? We actually started looking for a bigger boat, a different boat, and we just couldn't find something that we really truly wanted. And somebody told us to take the boat that you know, and because we know this boat, we decided to look into what we needed to do to get Invincible ready to take her. And we did a few modifications and got her ready. We also lived on Invincible for
five summers
before we went on the loop. And so we knew what we needed and did not need to be able to live on her. So that helped big time.
Yeah, we've got a few more shout outs. Hello to Linda. Thanks for joining us. And Bonnie says hi.
Hey, that's my toy. Hi, Bonnie. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Bonnie. And so do Susan and Greg on LinkedIn. Yeah. So, hi, everyone. We're glad you're with us. So I was going to start out with talking a little bit more about, you know, kind of your stories of the loop. But if you don't mind, let's stick it with the boat for a little while. So she's a 27-foot Sea Ray. Yep. And you mentioned that you made some modifications to get her ready. So were those for comfort or longevity on, you know, the route? Or, you know, what were the modifications and led you to decide those were needed?
Well, right off the bat, like as far as our fuel range, we did not have, it has a 100-gallon fuel tank.
Gasoline.
And we have never gone 250 miles like you have to do between Alton and Paducah, Kentucky. So we were really thinking, how are we going to do this? We had the marina. We're very close with the marina staff here at Grand Isle in Grand Haven, and they came in our boat. They were geeked. They made this a project. They wanted to get on the boat We had it mapped out. We were going to add a bigger waste tank, a bigger fuel tank, a bigger water tank. And we ended up discovering the bladder tank, a really good bladder tank that became kind of popular. Everybody kept wondering what it was on the bow of our boat. And we actually had it installed on the bow of our boat. And we
installed it.
Yeah, we installed it. It was all part of a kit. And we used that from, we actually filled up at Tall Timbers in Havana, Illinois, but just because we were the only boat there, and we thought, we want to try this when nobody else is around. If something goes wrong, it was a 50-gallon bladder tank. So we did that at Tall Timbers. And then the first time we used it, we successfully made it all the way from Alton to Paducah without needing that bladder, but we were down to 6 gallons. I would have been a nervous wreck.
Well, the Mississippi was flowing fast. So it pushed us. And yep. If we wouldn't have had that, it would have been different, I think.
Yep. And then so that push from the current, you might have actually needed.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Yep. Right. Any one more thing, you know, that would have caused us to use just a little more gas, we would have had to use it. But then we also used it from, let's see here. Demopolis to all the way to Mobile out of convenience. When we stayed at Bobby's, we got up in the morning. That was when you had to hit the locks. We had a 7 o'clock lock opening. Mm-hmm. And we looked around and they had so many boats at Bobby's Fish Camp. The fuel dock was 4 boats deep. There was no way we were going to get our boat in there. And I looked at that 50 gallons and I go, thank goodness. So we ended up dumping that in there and that got us all the way to Mobile.
Well, at some point you have to empty that out anyway, right?
Yep. In fact, we never used it. It rode around with us the whole rest of the loop. We never.
And now we have a looper that family that's going to be going, and they purchased it from us because they have about the same size boat. So it's going on to another loop trip.
Yep.
And just for a little bit of background for the newer folks who might not be too familiar with these areas, the biggest distance between fuel stops right now on the Great Lakes is, as Invincible was saying, from Alton to Paducah. It's about 250 miles. The good news is we are expecting Hoppy's Marina to come back online soon for both gasoline and diesel. So that'll cut that distance down to about 200 miles, which is a little bit more of what we were used to on the loop before Hoppy's closed because of storm damage probably 2 years ago. So last I checked in with them, they were hoping, kind of fingers crossed, by the end of this month of April. We're getting close to the end of the month. They were relying on some contractors to, you know, work some magic there. So it wouldn't surprise me if it pushes into next month a little bit. But, you know, for this season, they are expecting to have fuel again. So that's a big bonus, particularly for our gas-powered vessels. But where there's a will, there's a way. And we have a question actually specific to the bladder that you used. A question from Bill is, did the extra weight on the bow affect the boat's performance?
No, and it's kind of funny. We actually liked when we had the weight up there, we actually went faster at idle. We did probably, I'm going to say 90% of the loop was done at, I call it trawler speed, you know, 8-9 miles per hour. And we noticed we had less RPMs when that tank was loaded. We have no idea why our boat performed, but it actually did better at a no wake speed when that tank was full. I was joking with Sarah going, maybe we ought to top that off with, it made no sense, but maybe we ought to put 50 gallons in that. It seemed like the boat handled a little better.
My theory on that, Kim, is the aft cabin was so full of everything that we needed that it really balanced it out quite well.
I don't believe we ever, we did go up on plane in the river system. We did in Illinois and stuff when you had those long stretches, we did go up on plane with it, but we never hit any significant waves when that was up there.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You either got to have it totally empty or totally full. You don't want to have it in between because it would slosh around. So we always made sure when we did dump it that we had 50 gallons of space left in the main tank.
Yeah, so. Interesting. Not something I ever would have thought of, but makes total sense that you either want it full or empty. A couple more hellos to you. Hi, Alex. Thanks for joining us again.
Hello. We've
got Debbie from Vero Beach. Hey, Debbie. Thanks for joining. So you talked a little bit, Sarah, about all of the stuff was in the app.
This is her area.
Harley is amazing. Harnan is absolutely amazing with the engine and mechanical, anything like that. Mm-hmm. My forte is I love things to be organized, and everything has a spot and it goes in that same spot, so that we always know where things are at. The best thing that we found out worked, and again, we did this before we went on the loop for those summers, were tubs with lids. And I always said if I had to go to the aft cabin to get something, I would play Jenga and just kind of move tubs around and slide tubs in, slide tubs out. Each tub was a designated items in that, so I knew where they were. We kept extra food, of course, on board, extra warm clothing and
plenty of paper towels. We never wanted to run out of paper towels.
He is a paper towel hoarder. Toilet papers, you know, essential stuff. So we really didn't run out of anything, even when that, you know, COVID hit,
right,
and there became a issue, that we really did a good job of, you know, resupplying, yep, when we could, and keeping the aft cabin.
And some of
packed.
That, some of that is definitely, like, you know, we bring up toilet paper, you know, we were using marinas for the most part, and the marinas
restrooms
were just absolutely fantastic during COVID. We got where it hit and locked everything down. We were in Fort Pierce, Florida, which was we were only supposed to stay there, 2 days?
2 days.
And we ended up staying a month because we just were kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. We figured we're not going to leave. We really liked Fort Pierce, and they had everything going on. Restaurants that would deliver food, or you could go pick it up. They had grocery stores. So that was like really the first time where we were wondering if we were going to run out of stuff, but it turned out.
Didn't.
Never been an issue.
No.
Never was an issue.
But I kind of, you know, made sure that we kept, you know, things that, you know, purchased things ahead so that we would make sure that we, you know, didn't have a shortage on stuff. And it worked out well. But I like that part. I think it's, you know, great that you can grab something and you've got it.
From what I remember of, you know, roughly this time last year, Fort Pierce, you probably were not alone there. I believe a lot of boaters kind of hunkered down there. What was that like, being aboard and therefore socially distanced, but also probably having some friends nearby that you would have loved to have been able to associate with? How did things work out being actually on the loop when COVID first started?
Yeah, when we left St. Lucie Campground, that was our last spot before we went through Stuart, Florida, and came up into Fort Pierce, Florida. We didn't know. We heard about COVID. We knew it was happening, but we didn't know that it was going to become a lockdown situation. When we got into the harbor there to get our slip at Fort Pierce, we kept called on the radio, and they kept saying, "Now, what's your boat name?" And we said, "Invincible." And they said, "Okay." Well, normally we only wait out there, you know,
five minutes,
yeah, you know, you usually know what's going to happen. They'll either come back and say, "Hey, you know, in 20 minutes, come on in." This time they were very cautious, and we were kind of getting concerned, and then they came back and said, "Do you have reservations?" We said yes, and they said, "Okay, come on in." So we came in, we docked, and the whole place was, it just didn't seem right. It was not the normal festive type, you know, when you pull into a marina. And when we went in, the staff at Fort Pierce were doing nothing but canceling reservations. If you couldn't get your boat there by midnight that night, they were done. They were not accepting any more boats. And we said, wow, we just got in.
Because the city,
the city
shut them down for 30 days, and they were city run marina. So they were going by the city's, you know, rules. So we went to lunch, and
it was actually St. Patrick's Day. It was our last in restaurant setting down
meal,
not really knowing what was happening. They're right part of the Fort Pierce city marina. And then when we left there, we went back to the office and said, "Hey, we want to sign up for," and she said, "Oh, you guys are good. You guys are in. You guys are always in."
And they had one more boat that was coming in after us. It was the only one that was allowed to come in because they were already right there. Yeah. And we got to know them a little bit.
Yep.
And but then we
made a call to Bonnie and Chris. They were in the Keys. We split with them. Actually, I think Demopolis was the last time we saw them. And I called Chris and I said, "Hey, what are you guys hearing down there?" And he goes, "What are you hearing?" I said, "You know, things are coming apart here. They're closing us down." He goes, "Well, they were actually saying they could not see where they were at." So they actually got a slip across the causeway from where we were at Fort Pierce. It was, I can't remember the name of the marina, but it was, you had to walk across the bridge to see them. And it was like, we were kind of alone until they, they showed up, and they made like this 4 or 5 day no marina trek from the Keys all the way to Fort Pierce. And when they got there the first day, we actually met on the bridge. I mean, we left on our side and then on their side.
It was like a Looper family reunion with one other boat, but we were so excited that we were going to be with them for a while.
Yeah, so it was great. You know, I think folks who weren't out there looping at the time probably didn't realize or don't remember that there was a big challenge with any city-owned marina pretty much anywhere, because cities were all closing down their employees and their staff. Of course, a city-run marina is run by city employees. So, you know, thinking back, Florida has since then become known as the place where everything's open. But this time, you know, along with everything else was closing down, and we had lots of panicked calls from loopers from Florida all the way to Illinois who were dealing with marinas that were shutting down, kicking people out. It was an interesting time. And of course now it's interesting in a different way as everybody's getting underway again, but
we called, we called home to our marina again. And we just called and said, you know, should we leave our boat? You know, Fort Pierce, there was a couple marinas there that would have taken us. And then we were thinking about taking a loading up and literally coming home and then starting to loop later. Everybody, including family, said, no, you guys are still in your boat. You're still boating. You're still enjoying. Nobody could put a boat in Michigan. Every marina was held. They did not get any boats until mid-June, actually, here in this marina. So they were telling us, enjoy it, you know, and stuff. So we end up riding it out.
So how far from crossing your wake were you when you ended up at Fort Pierce for a month?
Let's see here. I don't think that was halfway yet, was it?
No. Oh, I thought she meant when we made it back.
Oh.
You mean from that when we planned on returning?
Well, so I guess what I'm really asking is how much of the loop did you do after COVID? After COVID started, happened, and how different was it? So, you know, how far did you still have to go, and how did it change your trip?
The whole entire East Coast, you know, all the way, really all the way back to our slip. I mean, I'm here in Michigan,
but
we were done with COVID, and that was after we left April, sometime in April.
And we were on like some of the other loopers. We never planned on going into Canada. We had always planned on just coming through and around the Great Lakes. And so a lot of people were sending us messages saying, oh, we're so sorry that you're not able to go to Canada because the border's shut. And we're like, it's okay. We weren't going to anyways, because of living in Michigan, on Lake Michigan, we want to go backwards and go.
Yeah, we are doing Canada, just not this past year
and this year. So that part, the only big change was the place, some of the places were shut down. Museums we couldn't go into, some of the different places.
There was restaurants, some of them were open, some of them were not. There was a couple places. When we first started to leave, in fact, Chris from My Toy, Chris and Bonnie, I kind of kept saying, I'm not ready to go yet. Chris goes, I'm ready to go. And he started doing some homework and he found marinas that were open. He called all the way up to, you know, Baltimore, and figured out where we could go and where we couldn't. So it was kind of scary that morning, leaving a safe haven of Fort Pierce and kind of going into the unknown. And I know our traffic was nothing like a normal season. I mean, there was no boats. You know, you had the normal sport fishing boats and stuff, but you didn't have a lot of the normal traffic until we got up into New York and got into even in the Erie Canal. That's when we got back into loopers and people that we knew, and it was kind of like a reunion there at Shady Harbor.
Waiting for the Erie Canal to open up, so we had to, you know.
It opened up very late last year. It was into August before the Erie Canal opened up. So Alex was asking, so you passed through the Erie Canal in August or sometime thereafter, correct?
That's correct. In fact, we went in when they opened up half of it, and we could go all the way to Lock. I'm going to guess it was 26. Ilion Marina, the town of Ilion, was the last town we could get to, and then the lock after that was closed down. Still, they were opening it up. I mean, they needed to get the repairs completed and open it back up. And we went into Ilion, and that's where a lot of loopers kind of bunched up there waiting for it. And anybody that was going, either Canadians needed the Oswego Canal to get up into Lake Ontario, and then the people we were traveling with also, that's how they got home, was to go into Lake Ontario. And that section did not open up right away, but our lock opened up, I'm going to say, 4 to 5 days earlier than what we were originally planning. So we went back to the marina and said, we're going to leave in a couple of days here. We weren't really in a hurry, but we kind of wanted to get through the lock. You know, we didn't know how long they were going to keep things open, and it ended up turning out really good. But when we went through our first travel in the Erie Canal, when we went through, we made it to what? Seven locks, yeah, or something, seven or eight locks. And we spent a couple days at the small marina. The next day we were planning on going through maybe 5-6 locks. We ended up doing 12 locks in one day. We were the only boat.
That's what they told us.
The one lock master would call the next lock master, and he says, hey, and they kept calling us VIPs. He goes, it's VIP. He goes, you guys keep going. Cause I told him, I said, I don't want to get stuck in a spot where we don't want to spend the night, because they stopped the locks at 4:30. You need to be through your last lock. And he says, you're going to make it. He goes, I promise you, you're going to make it. And we went all the way through. Well, we made it all the way to Ilion. And I could not believe where we were at. We were getting texts from people and Nebo responses going, what are you guys doing? The whole Erie Canal in one day. And the lockmasters were just great. We'd come around the corner and I would pick up the mic to call the lock, and the door would open. I didn't even have to call. I mean, they were just, and he kept going, no, we knew, we heard about you guys, you know, coming down. And he says, keep coming.
I liked it because I was on the bow of the boat and I'd go, whoa.
Yeah, it was just like,
just open.
So, that's great. We had a lot of fun.
You don't hear that happening too often, because usually you're waiting for everybody else to get tied up, or, you know, some of the slower boats to even just make it to the lock. So that's a pretty experience. Definitely kind of a once in a lifetime kind of thing. A couple more folks saying hello. Colin says he's looking forward to seeing you when you do come to Canada. And we all hope that our Canadian friends can come here and we can head to Canada sooner rather than later. Yep. And Dave says he's sorry that he missed meeting you at Shady Harbor.
Oh, Shady Harbor. Yeah, okay.
And of course, Wendy and the rest of the Wilson clan from La Cigale are still in Marathon. So, hey, Wendy, good to see you. And Wendy, actually, and Bobby are going to be presenting at a webinar for us about the Erie Canal route and focusing their home waters, or when they're not in Marathon, or Lake Erie. Since we know Harlan and Sarah, a lot of folks are going to be following in your footsteps this year. Since we still can't do Canada, people will be headed to the Erie Canal once again, and depending on airdraft, either into the Oswego and onto the Welland, or through the Erie. But either way, they will end up in Lake Erie, and that's a little bit of the road less traveled for loopers. But I know Alex Ertz, who's with us today, has done it as well and written an article for last year's Great Loop Link about it, and we're going to make sure we get that out to everyone for this year as well about Lake Erie. But that webinar is coming up May 25th. If I'm not mistaken. I might have that date a little wrong. It's the last Tuesday in May for anybody who's looking for some details on Lake Erie. That webinar is coming up. And we've got from Maggie Jo.
Hey, Tom. Hi, there's Maggie Jo. Hello.
We finished the loop, Maggie Jo and Invincible together. Great guys.
he helped me change. Sarah and him were my, I'm going to say it, Tom, they were my nurses changing a prop. In the Erie Canal, we actually hooked something in deep water, just at idle. We caught something in the Erie Canal after the couple days earlier of going above wake and never hitting anything. Here we are going slow, and we caught something. So we ended up changing a prop. I can't remember exactly what. There's so many of the little towns there that you stop at. But he was my I had carried a wrench with us for 2 years in this boat that was the prop nut size. And of course, now I'm in the dinghy. I got my hands in the water. I'm looking at the prop. That wrench that we had carried for 2 years did not fit.
Oh, no.
Tom says, I got you covered. He leaves. He goes back, comes back with us. I said, I'm not removing bridge bolts. I mean, this was a serious a wrench, but it worked fantastic. So,
one of many examples of loopers and the close-knit family loopers that it you know, we will constantly, we are, you know, sending them messages, they're sending us messages, and And just, it's fantastic to have met all the people that we have met throughout the trip. It was, it's just been amazing.
Yeah. So you shared some stories from the Erie Canal. Tell us about some of your other favorite stops or some of your favorite towns along the way.
You know, we've been struggling with that question because we liked, literally, I mean, we literally had, every place was new. We really liked it. I mean, there's some places that, stood out. I personally really liked going from, was it Pensacola? Pensacola to Apalachicola was just for some reason, now there was some of the devastation from in Mexico Beach from the hurricanes, but once you kind of got through that, even that area was really, for some reason, I just felt very at peace going all the way through that waterway. And when you eventually get to Apalachicola, going through those cedar swamps and going through some of those smaller lakes, I had no idea that was like that. And we were traveling with a one other boat then at the time. It depends how we were doing that. But when we got to Apalachicola, I said, that was a beautiful trip.
See, and he said that, and I didn't understand it because it was okay. But my biggest, I mean, the part that I love the most was a place that we had actually traveled to before, and we stayed at Clearwater Beach for 2 months, and I just absolutely loved Clearwater Beach. But then also when we went to see the manatee at Crystal River.
Yep.
And I liked those areas. But really overall, we really enjoyed a lot of the area, so it's really hard to narrow it down to our favorites.
We did have some surprises, like Clifton, that in Mississippi, it's Clifton Marina. Stacy's the owner of.
It's on the 10 Tom, right? On the 10
Tom. Yeah,
Tom's.
Yeah.
I think that's Mississippi. I think so.
We had no idea. We pulled in there, and I'm thinking this is going to be a one and done. You know, we're going to get up in the morning, and there was a bunch of other loopers there that we knew, and it turned out to be the food was fantastic.
Amazing.
They had bands playing, and I said, "This is." We ended up staying 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, several. Well, same with Green Turtle Bay.
Yeah, Green Turtle Bay. We ended up staying a long time too.
We stayed at Green Turtle Bay, and then we stayed
that,
even Clifton, longer.
Tennessee.
Tennessee.
There we go.
One of my river whisperers. He knows all the town names. Knows exactly where they
that's
are.
Good. That's good. Yeah. Very
he
good.
He can always answer those questions for me. So thank you, Alex, for chiming in on that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there was another place that we both kind of, we had no idea when we got through New York City. I mean, that was overwhelming, even though everything went, there's Alex, mile 158. Very good. Yeah. We came through the city and
took pictures.
Yeah, we did.
Bonnie and Krista pictures
of
us.
We took turns of in front of the Statue of Liberty. And then we kind of worked our way out of the city going up the Hudson. Once you leave the city there, we had no idea how beautiful that is. All the way to Shady Harbor. That was just the mountain ranges. It just, it totally caught us off guard. I mean, it was like, that was a big surprise. That was a very welcome surprise. I didn't know that was like that there.
We'd never been in that area before via car or anything.
No.
So it was absolutely gorgeous along there. And I would love to go back during the colors. And I just think that would be an amazing area to be in that time of year. It'd be beautiful. Yep. So
that was neat.
Yeah.
You know, you did, as you said, from, you know, kind of from northeastern Florida, I guess, you know, from Fort Pierce along the Atlantic ICW in Florida for the rest of your loop back to Michigan was after COVID started. So, and then that would have been when you were going through New York City, through the Hudson River Valley. Do you feel like you missed anything because some of it was closed, or are you more about the scenery and the places and it didn't make that big of a difference to you?
One thing we did miss that we are definitely, it's on our list, is we were going to go up the Potomac River and do the museum, the Bible Museum, and several museums there. And that was totally a no-go. There was nothing open when we hit that area. And we knew it wasn't, we were pretty sure, as you even called, I think,
I did.
To make sure it wasn't.
I called to see if by chance, but there were a lot of protesting going on, and we just knew that was, so I think that's really the only change.
That was the biggie that we missed that was on the list. Doing the loop. Everything else, we had some surprises, like restaurants. Chris from My Toy and I, we're big on restaurants. And I always had them figured out, you know, when we get there. And there were some places where we stopped, we couldn't wait to go to this restaurant, and it wasn't even open. I mean, there was a couple of those situations Early on.
You cried.
Oh, yeah. It was very.
I would have cried too. I like my restaurants too.
Oh, yeah. And the big joke was every time we would go into the next state, they were going to open back up. They were ready to open up the restaurants. And it was always like a week after we left.
Yeah, we would leave always, and then they would open.
So when we got to Myrtle Beach, I said, hey, we're slowing down. Let's let them open up some stuff there. And they did.
Yeah.
Myrtle Beach was actually one of the first places where we got to
start down. Started to open up things. Yeah.
So I think we missed not being with a lot of loopers until we got into Shady Harbor. I think there would have been a lot more loopers with us because a lot of people stopped. There was not,
That's interesting that you say that. A lot of people stopped. I think a lot of people who were close to closing their wake hurried up and just got home as quickly as they did. From brand new members who had, taken that leap of faith and gone ahead and started anyway. Even though COVID was happening, and they were kind of calling me and saying, I don't understand. Everybody says this is a social trip. We can't find anybody.
That's sad.
That tried to encourage them and they did keep going. But you know what's been, shouldn't have been a surprise, but is becoming a surprise to me. We had, I don't remember the actual number now, but a little bit over 100 boats complete the Great Loop in 2020, which was a low year. And you can certainly understand why. The year before was 172, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. So we expected that to be low in 2020. What I really didn't put together is that I think 2021 is actually going to be a lower number of completions than 2020.
Really?
Because so many people that had planned to start in 2020 didn't, and they put it off. So we're sitting here and it's April 27th right now. We've had two boats report completion so far this whole year.
So it'll be 2022 then.
I think 2022 is going to be a better year. Obviously, as the year goes on, the people in the Great Lakes will be starting this summer. People in the rivers will be starting this fall. Anybody in Florida is out there now, and there's tons of boats out there now. But it's just that
if you look at people,
they're all just starting. That was me. We were sitting around the office in late February going, why are we getting no loop completion reports? And Julie was going, I have nothing to put in the newsletter because there's no loop completion. Wow.
It's going to take a while for that queue to get.
You find this that I think everybody either hurried up and finished or just didn't go. So we've got this lull. So I went back and looked, and last year by this time of the year we had about 40 boats that completed the loop. And again, I think some of them finished faster than they expected because of COVID. So I went back and looked at 2019, and by kind of mid-ish April, I looked at this a week or so ago, but by around mid-April in 2018 we had about 30 that had completed the loop, and we're still sitting here at 2 so far this year. So I think it's going to be a very low year. Something I had never anticipated. So we started wondering where the heck everybody was, and then we figured it out. Yeah. Got a couple more. Mary and Jen.
Oh, very good. Yeah.
You'll always be Pegasus to us, even if you're the former owners.
And our first alligator sighting was with them. Hello, David.
Hey, David. Thanks for joining. So we can take questions from anyone who is watching us on Facebook. You can just type those into the comments and we'll be able to pick those up from there. I do want to go back to one thing that the two of you mentioned. You mentioned the manatee in Crystal River. So that got me to thinking about the golf crossing. Did you take the Big Bend route through Crystal River or
We went to Steinhatchee. We did the 80-mile crossing from Caribel to Steinhatchee. We were just telling some other people about that around here that we were originally going to leave with 4 boats. And by the time we left, we only left with 1 other boat. So we crossed over to Steinhatchee, and it was one of our probably the rare situations where we really hit some big water. I would say out of the 8-hour run, I'm going to say 4 to 5 hours of that, we were in probably, I'm not going to say it's the biggest waves, but it was waves we were not used to. They weren't the normal Lake Michigan waves. They were the, the 2 to 3 footers, but they had these swells that would lift up. And I'm kind of like, we're going with another trawler. Luckily, I mean, thank goodness for them. And we're leading, and he started to come back and he goes, I can see, he says, you guys are climbing this, this hill, and he says, I can see your nav lights and everything. And he goes, I went, wow. And I didn't really, we didn't realize what we looked like in the boat. We were comfortable in the boat. Things were going okay. Mm-hmm. From their vantage, though, they're saying, my goodness, you guys are like hitting these huge waves. And then we started going down the backside of them, and I could not keep the boat. I had to be really on the throttle for 4 hours, you know, giving it gas on the way up and then really slowing at the top so we don't come down the backside of them. We were dipping our anchor pulpit in a couple times.
We did it five times.
And I said, this is probably out of the whole loop, because our day one of leaving from Grand Haven was crossing to Chicago. I mean, we know Lake Michigan really well, so we did 121 miles day one, and everybody kept asking, what are you guys going to do with the crossing? I said, we've already done it. I mean, that was – and
yeah, but on Lake Michigan. Yeah, but on Lake Michigan, yeah.
And it was different. We just weren't expecting it, and we ended up putting the trawler ahead of us, and we kind of – I think he helped a little bit leveling out the waves a little bit, but what was nice is I got a reference of when I needed to hit the gas and then when I needed to back down, and it was the only time in the entire loop we didn't feel unsafe, but I was glad we were with another boat. It was when we crossed Lake Michigan, we did that by ourselves. But when we did the, I told Sarah, I think that if we would have been by ourselves, we would have gone back to Carabel. I don't think we would have continued the crossing.
No, we would definitely have turned around.
Yep.
Because so,
tons of questions about this. Lot to unpack here. So, starting from the beginning, some loopers, for those watching who may not be familiar with the process for crossing the Gulf, it's 170, I think that's right. Alex will chime in for me. Statute miles, if you're going all the way straight across from Carabel to Tarpon Springs. For many boats, that's an overnight crossing, particularly for the slower trawlers, and that is very daunting for some people. So the other way to do that is the Big Bend. And that would be usually 2 to 3 hops. So the first one would be from Apalachicola or Carabel to Steinhatchee, just like Sarah and Harlan just told us. That one is still 80 miles, as they said. So it's still a big jump. And it's interesting to hear that you still had some pretty big weather concerns, because I think a lot of people mistakenly expect the Big Bend route to mean that they're in protected waters. And you're really still pretty far out in the Gulf to have. Going from Apalachicola to Steinhatchee. So 80 miles. So first question, in a Sea Ray, could you have gone straight across as a daylight all the way to Tarpon Springs in a daylight only crossing? Because you're a faster boat.
We would have had to, you know, go fast. We would have probably, with our bladder, we probably had enough fuel to do that. But when we're up on plane, we're a gas hog. I mean, compared to
fuel consumption, that makes sense, would have been a concern.
That would be the biggest concern, and of course,
and if there's waves in the Sea Ray, it wouldn't be comfortable going fast.
Our size of the Sea Ray. I think another thing that would play into that is if you had another fast boat going with you, if you had, you know, 2 or 3 all boats that could run 20 miles per hour, or, you know, some of them are doing, we met some people in Carabel that did it in one day. They did the run all the way to Clearwater. But they were running 38 miles. I don't know if that's knots or miles. It doesn't matter. They were going fast. Way faster than our boat. Yeah, would go
much bigger.
But if you could run, if you ran with, I don't know if we would have wanted to do the night crossing at idle in this boat. No. I'd want to make sure there was no bad weather for, you know, 4 days leading up to it and 4 days after. I would have been probably much more concerned about that. But if you were going with other boats that were all at the same speed, I think it would be kind of fun to do that. I think you could do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if Bella got us. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
The other key component there is waiting for that weather window, which you kind of alluded to, that you would want a 4 day before and after. You know, the good news is that many loopers are typically waiting along with you for that weather window. So it's usually possible to find some buddy boats. So, you know, kind of my next question for you is, you said you started out with 4 other boats you were supposed to cross with. Kind of the shorter crossing, the 80 miles to Steinhatchee, and you ended up with 1. What happened there?
Well, one boat had a mechanical issue right on the morning. They were leaving with us, and they're actually, we see them a lot, Jane and Jonathan. From Bellagata.
Bellagata.
Bellagata. And they were going, in fact, in the morning, they were originally going to be the only people crossing with us. We had one boat that dropped out. They were not going to cross the Gulf. And then another boat wasn't going to cross the Gulf. They were going to do the long cross. And thank goodness for Brenda from Real Grace. She talked her husband into going with us. They were the trawler that we were crossing to Steinhatchee. And then, yeah, I guess it's kind of, I don't know how to say it, but when we got to Steinhatchee, now you still have two more days of weather windows that you got to watch. And we're being from Lake Michigan. When you have an east wind, we can still boat on our side of the lake. Well, when we got up in the morning to leave Steinhatchee to go to Crystal River, there was an east wind. And I'm telling the other boat, this is going to be great. It's going to be flat. Well, I didn't know to be in at least 5 to 6 foot of water, you got to go way out into the Gulf before you start to head north. So we were out in there where we weren't protected. Yeah, in south. We weren't protected anymore. So we had some waves there, but nothing like when we crossed the main, the run over to Steinhatchee. And when we got into Crystal River, that was the most, we had so much fun in that. We took dinghies into the springs. Manatees were coming right up. They say, don't touch them. It's almost hard not to. I mean, they literally come right up. Yeah, they come right up. I mean, they're just so curious. And while we were in the slips, they were right coming between the boats. So it was, I'm glad we did that. Bellagato is actually the one that told us. We said we were pretty convinced we weren't going to do the long crossing. And they're from that area. And she said, you definitely want to do the Steinhatchee. And we're so glad we did.
Yeah. Well, and you also kind of in that hit on why some people do choose to do the longer crossing all the way directly to Tarpon Springs. And that is because you do need three hops for most people doing
the right.
Yep. Right. So for some people, they prefer to just get it over with in one big hop.
Yep.
And one big weather window, and others prefer to do the big bend and take the three hops. And the manatees certainly are a good reason to head for the big bend. Crystal River is a place, and there's natural springs that keep the water a fairly constant temperature year round, which is what attracts the manatee there. And I've known loopers who have done the longer crossing straight to Tarpon Springs or into Clearwater, and then actually backtracked to go to Crystal River to the manatee. So tell us, you know, kind of what you went from Apalachicola or Caribel to Steinhatchee.
We went from Caribel.
From Caribel to Steinhatchee, and then Steinhatchee to Crystal River, and then Crystal River directly to
Clearwater Beach. We went to Clearwater Beach. So,
excellent.
In fact, we got there just a few days before Christmas.
Yeah, the 19th of December. So we were there, and then we planned on staying there for 2 months. We had a lot of family and friends coming down over Christmas and after Christmas and New Year's. And so it was a perfect place to have a lot of friends and family come and visit. And it's a fantastic city with the beach right there. Yeah. A little chilly.
The wind, you get some waves coming in there. It's not as protected as Clearwater Beach, but the area, I mean, we left our boat. I didn't even put shoes on. I would just get out of the boat and walk. We'd walk across over to the beach, and we said, this is a place. But we did have a couple nights where there were some big waves coming into the
right
marina.
Into the marina.
Yeah, just from the weather. It had to be the perfect wind direction, but it was worth it.
It was worth it.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, kind of the same principle that applies to being out in the Gulf on a boat, too. The waves can be big. So my last question about your crossing, the first leg from Caribel to Steinhatchee, you mentioned, obviously, the conditions were not really what you expected. What do you think happened there? Did you misinterpret a weather window, or did the weather just change?
I think the swells, I mean, I needed to, you know, we thought we were really tied in pretty good. It said 2 foot, I think it said.
Right.
And they probably the actual, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but the actual waves that we were going through probably were not more than 2 foot, maybe 3 foot, but these swells that were underneath it would just, I mean, there was times where Real Grace would be in front of us and they would disappear in those swells. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, if somebody said, well, how big of waves were you in? I really would say we probably weren't hitting anything bigger than 3 foot.
Right.
But those swells were another, you know, multiplier to that. Yeah. So it would push those things up. And, something that we weren't ready for. It was no bad weather.
No.
The wind really, I don't think we really had a lot of wind. It just was, you know, I think the forecast was a little off a little bit, but I do remember a few people, including, I think her name's Kim from Sea Quarters, Marina.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
She told us, don't go. She actually told us, do not go. She said, do not go. And her exact words, because I said this when we, she was right. She was correct. Yeah. She said, you guys will be putting pieces of your boat back together when you cross. But then when we looked at our schedule, it was going to be another 2 weeks, way after Christmas, before we could have ever have left. So we kind of did exactly what you're not supposed to do, you know, leave when it was the, you know, it wasn't ideal conditions.
But we also decided that if we got out there and we did not feel safe, or we, you know, it looked like it was, we had decided we would definitely turn around. And when we got out there, it was okay.
We never felt, like I said, I would have been much more nervous if we weren't with a buddy boat.
Right.
But we
didn't feel like we were. They
took some videos of us and they were sending them around. As soon as we got back into cell service, we were getting videos of our boat. And my goodness, they're taking videos of us and they're already sending them out. The videos made it look way worse. The boat did fantastic. We weren't going side to side. We were just kind of going up with the waves, but it seemed like you had to sit there and watch your chart plotter, because it seemed like you weren't making any progress. It was like going, my goodness, we're going to be out there. But it was all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably, if we were to do that again in the same forecast, I probably wouldn't go. It all depends on the other boats. It all depends. Yeah.
Well, and like I said, the key is really a good weather window, and, you know, weather encompassing the sea conditions as well. And there's lots of resources to help with that. We do seminars and webinars about that closer to the crossing season. So if anybody's concerned about that, there's plenty of resources we'll be putting out for you come the fall. And Tom has a comment about the waves. He thought they were good size waves. And he ran until Invincible past him.
We would always... They're in a trawler, and there was some times where they would leave couple hours, you know, to get to the next marina. They would leave before us, and we'd always catch them before we get to the marina. And I guess he must be referring to crossing Oneida Lake.
Must be Oneida Lake. Is that it, Tom? Oneida Lake.
I'm guessing that must be what he's talking about, because there was a storm coming, and once again we said, "Boy, do we want to cross this lake? That's a big lake." And we end up, and we said, "We'll see you guys on the other side." They're going along, and I guess when we went by, he goes, he says, "I realize how fast you can go now compared to us." That's what he's telling us. I'm thinking that's what he's talking
about.
But
that's what we like about, I mean, having the Sea Ray, we can go fast when we want to, or can go fast in different areas. And we like that. We don't mind going trawler speed, as we call it. You know, it's fine.
Yeah. I like going slow, though. In fact, back to your question about doing the big crossing. Whenever I'm running this boat, at 20 miles per hour or 25, we actually couldn't go full speed. No, it says, "Oh, no traveling to Detroit," he says.
Okay.
It must have been on late. Okay.
I know what he's talking about now.
When we're idling or going, you know, like I say, it's 1,000 RPMs or whatever it is when we're in the rivers, I feel like the boat could do that all day. I'm not worried about it breaking. We're not stressing it, doing anything. But when we're running 20, 25 miles per hour, the boat's working. And I always think, boy, at that 250-mile crossing, if you were running 25 miles an hour, the boat would be working for, you know, 10 hours. It's going to be under a lot of stress. And that actually, early on, concerned me. We left with the boat it actually had 1,000 hours on it when we left.
This boat.
So we were kind of concerned, you know, that we're going to be pushing a gas engine by the time we get back anyway.
Put it this way, Kim. We took the title of Invincible with us. In case we needed to, you know, change to a different.
But she did.
She did great.
Yep.
Well, and for anybody who wasn't with us in the beginning, Invincible is a 27-foot Sea Ray single engine gasoline powered. So there's a little bit of perspective for you if you missed that in the beginning. We got a couple questions that came in for you too, based on the idea that you were taking Invincible, which had been a freshwater boat, through saltwater for the loop routes. So first question is, did you change the bottom paint for the time you were going to be in salt water from what you normally use in Lake Michigan?
They did. They actually, at the marina here, they took off. What we've been using here in the Great Lakes is almost like a Teflon, not ablative. It stays on the boat, and then when they pressure wash, they pretty much clean it off. What we had them put on, actually, we used their recommendations here at the marina. They put four layers of an ablative paint. So if anything would stick to it, when we would take off, it would immediately come off. And it performed. We never had to have, we only had our boat pulled once in Fort Myer. They pulled our boat for one day, and we had our outdrive service done. That's one thing we couldn't.
That's a yearly thing, though.
Right.
It's just not because we had problems or anything.
But they did it there. Our bottom paint looked fantastic there, and it looked good when they pulled our boat here. What didn't hold up from barnacles and everything, our outdrive, when we left Clearwater, Florida, you couldn't even tell we had a stern drive. It just, the oysters and everything had been on there. And we took the boat to St. Petersburg, and then we actually got in the dinghy and cleaned our prop with paint scrapers or whatever. And we didn't have to do that to the bottom, and our trim tabs got pretty barnacled up, yeah. But they changed the paint. It's kind of like the paint that we used to use here. But one thing we did get changed, well, all of our zincs, I'll call them our sacrificial anodes, here we're using something that when you hit into, somebody's just asking the question right there. And we found out in Fort Myer that we forgot two areas. Our trim tabs have sacrificial anodes, and those things were totally gone. They were just like paper. There was nothing left of them, and the other ones held up good. So we switched those in Fort Myers, and then made it all the way back here, and they've now switched us back to, it's kind of a combo sacrificial anode now. This one, actually, the ones they have on here, because he says, you guys might go again. I said, well, if we do, it's not going to be in this boat, but it's made for both freshwater and saltwater, what they put on there. I just can't remember the actual name of them.
I can't either. Nope.
So you mentioned that you may do the loop again, but maybe not in this.
We're definitely going again. It's there's no doubt. I mean, we do have plans. We don't know if we're going to, we definitely want to do Canada from here and take a whole summer and we're going to enjoy Canada for a whole, a long time, and then come back to our slip here and then be pulled for that winter and then do the loop again.
We just don't know when because Canada,
We definitely want Canada open back up, and we are definitely going to get a different boat. I mean, before on the loop, we wanted to go huge. Now we're thinking we just want a little more boat than what we got now.
Just a few more comfort creatures.
Yeah.
A few more. Built-in generator.
Yeah. Yep.
It'd be nice.
I know we talked about the inverter when we were talking about the mods. I know before everybody was on, but that was something that we put in this boat. And we use that a lot.
What percentage of the time would you say that you anchored?
I think we anchored very little.
Very little.
10 times on the whole entire loop. Definitely in the, when you have to do the Mississippi there, we anchored at the, one time you're on a lock wall and stuff, but that still was, there was no power there.
But I think that when we left, we thought we were going to anchor more. When we started anchoring, though, we found out because of the Invincible being as small as it is, the dinghy is on the is upright on the swim platform, and it takes up the entire swim platform. So for us to do anything, you have to put the dinghy in the water. You have to, and there's a lot to do, and it just is not as easy as a lot of the other boats that can just pull in, throw their anchor in there.
And they got their grills going, I mean, they're like a little, they're a floating house.
And it wasn't just as easy as, I mean, we thought it was going to be, so we didn't anchor as much because of that. But the places that we did anchor in were
fantastic.
Amazing places. So we enjoyed that.
Not an anchorage, but we did do hoppies too.
We did go to hoppies.
We left Alton with, I'm going to say 12 boats. Loopers. And we kind of got on the radio a couple times going through St. Louis saying, hey, we're not continuing on. We're going to go to Hoppy's. Well, when we took the turn off to go, just to turn to go to Hoppy's, we were getting phone calls and texts from everyone. What are you guys doing? Are you guys okay? Did you break down? We go, no, we're staying at Hoppy's. So we didn't make it clear there, but there were some beautiful anchorages. Little Diversion.
Oh, gorgeous.
In fact, we got hung up before Mobile. We stayed with a couple boats we traveled with them, Sea Lord and Bubba Fly. We love the name of the sailboat, Bubba Fly. We ended up staying because Mobile Bay was very
angry.
Very angry. There was big waves in Mobile Bay. So we ended up getting really close in those last few anchorages there on the Mobile River. I guess it's called the Mobile River there. Yeah. Alex will probably come on and correct me on that one. But we ended up staying a couple extra nights on the hook, and those were fantastic.
Beautiful.
We had a ball. It was just like how people describe it.
Yeah. So these always fly by. We actually only have a few minutes left, but I really want to be able to touch on some advice that you have for others who are still planning, because I know there's lots of people out there who are considering a boat in the 27 foot range and maybe are considering whether to do it on the boat they have. You know, and a gasoline boat brings some challenges. What's your advice to people who are still planning that you would want, that you've learned from the experience that maybe would be helpful to somebody else?
I'll do one and then And, you know, if you're going to do something, especially in a boat the size we did it in, stay on it for like the summer before you ever take off. If you're going to stay on the boat the whole year or 2 years, however long you're going to do the loop, definitely stay with whoever's going to be on the boat, you know, a spouse, whatever, and do some long-term, even if you're at your home port, just stay on the boat, you know, for a long time, so that that first couple of weeks going down the river is not your longest you've ever stayed on the boat. That's a biggie. And then
I think one of them, enjoy the loop. Don't go to places or ports just because people are telling you to go there. Make the loop your loop, not the people you're traveling with. And I think that, you know, and part of that is don't do the loop because you want to say we did the loop. Do the loop to enjoy it and have fun and learn from it, because we, even seasoned boaters, we learn so much.
I learned how to back a boat on 10 foot. And I swear at Panama City, that was a 5 foot long dock. It was at the end, I think it was 4 inches wide. It was just like this triangle that we had to put our boat on in the wind. Before the loop, we don't have to back in hardly anywhere in the Great Lakes, but we got really good at it. In fact, at Fort Pierce, they were amazed. We just backed right in like it was nothing. And she goes, hey, that's all right. So, yep.
Anything else?
We just always say, you know, fact check everything. You know, when you hear things, I mean, you're going to get so much bombarded with information. Especially when people find out, hey, you're really going, or, you know, if you start asking questions, and it's great. I mean, you want to get all the information, but you don't want to take it all at face value. And it also depends on if you're talking with somebody that's in a 45 foot boat and you're in a 27, the two, you know, the answer might be different to your question. I mean, we went with a dinghy that has an electric trolling motor. We used it everywhere. I mean, we had a ball with it, but you know, you ask that question to somebody in a 45 foot boat that's got this really nice dinghy on the back. He goes, what are you talking about with why do you have to charge up your battery every night so that you can run your dinghy the next day? But that's because that's how we had to do it. So you kind of got to, you know, take it and really do your research yourself, you know, and it all comes out. It's not as scary. We were scared to death at first before we left.
We were. I mean,
our first night in Chicago was hooking to a mooring ball. First time we'd ever physically,
by ourselves.
We had other people hook to a mooring ball and then we would hook to them. But that was our first mooring ball. But we kind of talked it through and it all worked out good. But
And just have patience for each other, because if you learn to, I mean, like even when you hand stuff to each other, you know, always saying I've got it or thank you so that they know you have it before. So many people lose things in the water, and not that we didn't almost some of the times, but, you know, be real considerate to knowing that it's new to both of us or to everyone on board. And so you just have to be, you know, have the extra patience of, you know, being considerate to each other. And it makes it a great trip.
You become tolerant of everything. If you've done the loop, nothing. We're in an area here, we're on a fairway and we have lots of boats that go back behind us. I firmly believe they could water ski behind us right now and it wouldn't bother us. After doing the loop, we anchored in so many places, or we're tied to a dock, you know, we're things weren't so smooth. But we got a Google in here. But I don't know. Things don't. I think we are definitely our confidence. We build our confidence.
Yeah,
up, all kinds
definitely
of stuff.
Build confidence up. Mm-hmm.
Just two questions that came. Men that are related to whether you would do things different. So I'm going to read those to you and let you answer those before we wrap up. One is there anything you would do differently, just kind of general? And the other is anything different that you'd bring along the next time?
Yeah, one thing we did before we left is we have just receive only AIS, which was, we loved Wonderful. It. I mean, we used it in definitely communicating with TOWS. And I used it for another thing. We were traveling with a lot of people that were broadcasting AIS. So I could match their speed perfectly. I knew exactly where they were at. You know, if they were doing 7 miles per hour, we could match it at 7 miles per hour. And we never like had to like throttle up or throttle down. Kind of knew where everybody was at. I think if I was to do it again, I would definitely get the full where we would have broadcast AIS. Just I'd feel a little better about everybody knowing where we're at.
But definitely if you don't have AIS, receiving AIS, definitely, in our opinion, it's really needed. It really is. And I'm glad that we put that in the boat before we left.
It's definite. just being able to call people by their, you know, the tows by their names, especially like going through Lamont, Illinois, it was tow after tow after tow, one lane. And we had to work, you know, you have to make agreements with each tow. We were able to pick each one out. He would tell us, pull off to the side. They'd go by us. And we worked right through there. We did take some things that we never used. Like we bought communicators.
Oh, marriage savers.
Yeah, we never got them out of the box.
We tried them at the house and never used them, but we're going to keep them for our next
week. A bigger boat, though, bigger boat. I could see where we saw a lot of people using them.
A lot of people in the locks and
All right, we will hold it there. Sarah and Harlan, you have been so generous with your time and your information, and it's been a joy to talk with you because your enthusiasm for the loop is absolutely contagious. It's been a wonderful session. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, everybody.
And thanks, everyone, who has watched us on Facebook. We appreciate you being here. We do these bi-weekly. However, the next few weeks are our virtual spring rendezvous on Tuesday evening. So the next one of these will be 2 weeks from tomorrow. We'll be doing it on a Wednesday instead of a Tuesday next time around. So we hope to see you all then. Thanks again. Bye, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Yep. Thank you.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.